First off, we didn't get to talk much about the Deacons for Defense, but that the civil rights movement or the Black freedom struggle, as I say, is not just reduced to a nonviolent strategy. And that the Deacons for Defense were one of many organizations that fought back and protected their community. And that is also how rights were won in many different communities. So I want people to understand that. And I want people to take away and to find out more about the history that has been erased.
We have 5 seconds.
Yes, to find out more about the history that's been erased, and also white people especially, because we're at a critical moment in this country where they're trying to erase our history.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, Yoruba Richenbragh Lichtenstein and Denise Ford.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Does your employer have a matching gifts program? Many companies offer dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contributions for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies also match gifts made by retirees and or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions, then request a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer matching.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, President Biden warns Russia could invade Ukraine in a matter of days. Oregon is on the downslope of the Omicron wave. And Portland area leaders sign on to a compromise I-5 expansion plan. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 11th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. President Biden warns that Russia could invade Ukraine within days, even before the end of the Olympics. Foreign affairs experts believe Vladimir Putin intends to encircle the capital, Kiev, and force a regime change. U.S. citizens in Ukraine are being told to leave in the next 2 days and are told there won't be a military evacuation of Americans. Biden told other NATO and EU leaders that his diplomatic sources believe the invasion will happen in the next few days. U.S. officials said Friday that the Pentagon would send another 3,000 troops to Poland. Democrats will meet with President Biden about Supreme Court nominees, and former President Trump is under scrutiny for official documents at Mar-a-Lago. With those stories and more, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
His decision to appoint a black woman to the Supreme Court is literally going to change the face of the court for the future and for our history in the United States.
Democratic Illinois Senator Dick Durbin met with President Joe Biden Thursday to discuss the upcoming Supreme Court vacancy, with Justice Stephen Breyer retiring in June. Potential nominees include D.C. Court of Appeals Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, California Supreme Court Justice Leandra Kruger, and U.S. District Court Judge Michelle Childs of South Carolina. Democratic New York Senator Carolyn Maloney, who chairs the House Oversight Committee, sent a letter to the National Archives seeking answers about the removal of White House documents to former President Trump's Florida residence, Mar-a-Lago. Meanwhile, in Queensbridge, New York, Maloney introduced the Preventing Pretrial Gun Purchases Act while speaking at a rally on gun violence.
If we could pass gun safety laws, we could save lives. It's that simple.
At a community college in Culpeper, Virginia, President Biden addressed the high cost of insulin, healthcare premiums, surprise billing, and price transparency. Biden noted more than 300,000 Virginians signed up for ACA coverage during the open enrollment period and said his administration aims to lower costs for the average American.
And we want to go further. Lower prescription drug prices, get a cap on the amount people pay on Medicare, pay for prescription drugs, and to bring more clarity and fewer surprises when you get your bills if you've been hospitalized.
Former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson spoke on Capitol Hill Thursday after the Senate passed legislation ending forced arbitration in sexual misconduct cases.
And I believe this bill will also have a dual effect. It's going to help companies get on the right side of history, that's for sure. But it will also stop the bad behavior, because now the bad actors will know that women's voices will be heard.
Carlson said she learned in 2016 she could not sue her former employer, Fox News chief Roger Ailes, for harassment, but instead had to go into forced arbitration. Finally, as it starts to accept this year's returns, the IRS is still working through returns filed last year, requiring manual processing. The backlog has now been trimmed from 35 million to 6 million returns. Erin Collins with the Taxpayer Advocate Service says the agency is underfunded and understaffed.
Please file electronically this year. Paper is not the IRS's friend. I have been saying that it's the IRS's kryptonite, and there's piles of it, and they're struggling to get through it.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The latest forecast from Oregon Health and Science University says the COVID Omicron wave in Oregon has peaked. They expect the hospitalization rate to recede to pre-Omicron levels by the end of March. Experts say that is still dependent on the Oregon Health Authority maintaining the statewide indoor mask mandate until March 31st. The Omicron peak in Oregon was actually about a third lower per capita compared to peaks elsewhere in the U.S. Dr. Peter Graven is the director of the OHSU Office of Advanced Analytics. Dr. Graven said, quote, "It's important for people to stick with masking through the next several weeks. Even though our forecast projects light at the end of a very long tunnel, we can't lose sight of the fact that hospitals in Oregon are still struggling to deliver timely care for everyone who needs it," end quote. Several thousand public workers in New York City were slated to lose their jobs at the end of today's workday for not complying with the city's coronavirus vaccination mandate. They represent about 1% of the city's workforce, and include teachers, firefighters, and police officers. The mandate required most workers to get a COVID vaccine by the end of October or be placed on unpaid leave. 4,000 or so workers had failed to comply by the end of January. A union coalition sued to block the mass firings, but they lost in a judicial ruling yesterday. Some unions, like the United Federation of Teachers, negotiated to stay on unpaid leave through the late summer, though not all members took advantage of that deal. New York City Mayor Eric Adams did note that city workers have largely complied with the mandate. The mayor said, quote, "Living in a city as complex as this, there must be rules. We follow them. The rule is to get vaccinated if you're a city employee. You have to follow that," end quote. The proposed expansion of I-5 in the Rose Quarter with highway caps has new support from local officials. Governor Kate Brown has gotten local officials to sign on to the plan, which is non-binding. Metro President Lynn Peterson, Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, and Multnomah County Commissioner Jessica Vega Peterson signed on to support an I-5 expansion that includes a 4-acre cap on the highway. The cap is intended to help build back Portland's historically black neighborhood, Albina, which was decimated by the highway construction in the 1960s. ODOT refers to this plan as Hybrid Option 3, and the agreement is technically non-binding. Federal authorities required ODOT to redo their environmental impact analysis last month, and they still have the authority to reject the project. The sign-on from local officials was important, though, because the cost of the project has doubled since the cap was added. One other important aspect for critics is that the center lane has been made smaller, which makes it less likely for it to be later expanded into a new lane for more cars. The eventual width of the highway is still up in the air, and the Hybrid 3 plan isn't locked in either. The Oregon Secretary of State earlier this week rejected several ballot proposals aimed at capping political donations. Now, the Senate Majority Leader Rob Wagner, Democrat, wants to put a proposal directly before the voters. A 66-page amendment to Senate Bill 1526 limits how much candidates, labor unions, political party committees, and advocacy groups can accept and donate as state elections. It also sets penalties for rule violations and creates a system of campaign public financing. The amendment has, and is missing, some controversial provisions. It allows limitless giving for small donor committees, but does not require political ads to fully reveal the source of their funding. That second requirement was included in some of the proposals the Secretary of State rejected. If passed by the House and Senate, the proposal will appear on the November 2022 ballot. If voters pass it, it would take effect after the 2024 election. Three ballot proposals limiting campaign donations failed to meet a technical requirement required by the state constitution and were rejected by Secretary of State Shemaiah Fagan. Backers want to challenge that determination in court. In the past, the Oregon government declined to create a system that uses taxpayer money to pay for candidates who limit private donations. Wagner's proposal offers up to $8 million for gubernatorial candidates and $600,000 for those running for the legislature. Oregon business and industry has said that the new proposal is too long and that it discriminates against business interests. It also called the amendment too complex. Oregon is one of only a small handful of states that places no limits on how much individuals can give candidates, and studies show it has a big impact on what actually gets done in government. If Senate Bill 1526 does not pass, reform advocates could try for a similar ballot measure by gathering at least 112,000 signatures by July. Wagner said, quote, "I believe one central truth holds. The voters of Oregon want action on establishing a system of regulation," end quote. Amid questions about election security in other states, Ohio boards of election largely have escaped the speculation. Ohio's 2020 and 2021 elections were nearly 100% secure, according to the Ohio Secretary of State. Mary Sherman has more on the story.
Since Election Day 2020, the integrity and accuracy of the vote has been the subject of speculation across the country, with local boards of elections often caught in the crosshairs. But here in Ohio, election officials seem to have avoided much of the controversy, with far-right groups and supporters of former President Donald Trump still questioning the 2020 results. Several red states have moved to give legislatures more power over elections instead of secretaries of state and penalize election workers for technical mistakes. Aaron Sellers with the Franklin County Board of Elections says that while politics are political, elections administration in Ohio is not.
Everything that we do here is done in bipartisan teams. For example, when a voting location manager brings back the supplies on election night, if that person is a Republican, there's a Democrat ride-along person that comes with them, or vice versa.
More than half of voters in a recent Quinnipiac poll said they do not believe there was widespread voter fraud in the 2020 presidential election. Ohio's post-election audits revealed an accuracy rate of 99.98% in 2020 and 99.99% in 2021. That data is from counties that utilized a percentage-based audit. While other states scrambled to develop a plan for voting in 2020 due to COVID, Sellers says Ohio was ahead of the curve. Critics argue mail-in voting is more susceptible to fraud, but he explains there are multiple verification processes before the ballot is even mailed out.
And when that is returned, there's additional measures before we put that in the pile to count. It's verification signatures. It's the last four digits of their SOCH, their driver's license number, whatever they're providing. You know, those things are checked on the front end and the back end before those ballots are counted.
With Ohio's legislative and congressional district maps still not set in stone, Sellers notes boards of election are in a holding pattern when it comes to preparations for the May 3rd primary.
We're just as anxious as I'm sure our elected officials are to get this resolved. Elections officials, we take an oath to do this, and when it's scheduled, we'll do what we need to do like we did in 2020.
On Wednesday, Republican Senate President Matt Hoffman suggested keeping the May 3rd primary for statewide and local elections and holding a second for state House and congressional seats. There are concerns about the cost for two primaries, as well as the possibility of lower turnout. This story was produced with support from the Carnegie Corporation of New York. I'm Mary Sherman.
New data from the Multnomah County District Attorney shows bias crime reports are up 40% last year. The data were part of 11 different data dashboards provided from the DA. Bias crimes are offenses targeting people because of their race, religion, gender identity, sexual orientation, disability status, or country of origin. These types of crimes are severely underreported, so experts say it doesn't necessarily mean there's been an increase in hateful behavior. 55 bias crimes were reported in Multnomah County in 2021. About 35% of bias crime victims identified as Black, 13% as Hispanic, and 23% as white. Perpetrators were majority male and white. Bias crimes are a new classification in Oregon as of 2019. They used to be called intimidation, and in 2019, legislators upgraded the offense to a felony. The AARP Community Grant Challenge is accepting applications for projects that make communities more livable and that can be completed within a few months. The grant provides a chance for organizations and local governments to try new ideas. Eric Tegetoff has more on the story.
Local organizations and governments in Oregon looking for funding for their projects now have an opportunity with AARP's Community Challenge Grant. Applications are open for the 6th annual program, which awards out small grants to projects that help make communities more livable. Bandana Shrestha, State Director of AARP Oregon, says challenge grants are designed to support projects that can be turned around quickly.
They should be projects that hopefully get people excited on a new idea, fast-tracking new ideas, or to build momentum on an existing project. And we're particularly looking for projects that prioritize and support residents 50+.
She says AARP looks for projects that engage communities by creating more vibrant public spaces or improving housing or transportation. Applications are being accepted through March 22nd, and the selected projects must be completed by November 30th. This year, AARP also is calling for projects that leverage funding through laws like the American Rescue Plan Act or the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Maryland Daily Blair's organization, Center 50 Plus in Salem, received a grant for a downtown summer pop-up in 2019, which engaged people in hands-on education and ways to navigate the city's public transit system.
The challenge grant is just that. It's a challenge to your community to create the community you want for everyone. And for us here in Salem, it was building a place for all ages and abilities where they can live and thrive for a lifetime.
AARP Oregon is holding an informational session online on February 22nd to help guide prospective applicants in how to submit proposals. Since 2017, 16 projects in Oregon have been funded, with grants totaling more than $200,000. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegetoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines from fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's KBOO's Black History and Future series. Stick around at 7 for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear, with an overnight low of 42 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny, with a high of 59. Today in history in 2011, the first wave of the Egyptian Revolution culminates in the resignation of Hosni Mubarak and the transfer of power to the Supreme Military Council after 17 days of protests as part of the Arab Spring. The quote of the day is from French mathematician and philosopher René Descartes, who died today in 1650. Descartes said, quote, "If you would be a real seeker after truth, it is necessary that at least once in your life you doubt, as far as possible, all things."
Thank you.
The 15-year-old Russian figure skater who's already broken records might not be able to compete in the Olympics for a potential doping violation. The Court of Arbitration for Sport is holding an urgent hearing to decide whether Russian figure skater Kamila Valieva can compete in the women's event at the Winter Olympics. Valieva tested positive for the banned substance trimetazidine at the Russian National Championships 6 weeks ago. The test was flagged only this Tuesday in a delay caused by coronavirus. It surfaced after Valieva helped the Russians win a gold medal in the team event. The medal ceremony was actually postponed, and Russia may still be disqualified. Valieva is a heavy favorite to win the individual event. She has set world record scores and was the first woman to land a quad jump at the Olympics. Russia's anti-doping agency initially banned her when the positive test was announced. They lifted the ban on appeal the next day. The World Anti-Doping Agency and the International Testing Agency on behalf of the International Olympic Committee do not want her to skate. The emergency hearing will only rule on a provisional ban at these Olympics. Penalizing a minor potentially involved in doping is challenging. When an individual under 18 is allegedly involved in a doping violation, her coaches and team doctors must be investigated. Valieva might personally just receive a reprimand. The Russian Olympic Committee, or ROC, will fight to keep the team gold she contributed to. It says her doping test at the Olympics came back clear. Russia is competing as the ROC without the Russian anthem or flag because of fallout from previous doping scandals, including a cover-up at the Winter Olympics hosted by Russia in 2014. Another scandal could extend its two-year ban even further. A guilty verdict has been reached in a cold case murder of an Alaska Native woman. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Fairbanks, Alaska jury returned guilty verdicts Thursday for a man who killed a young Alaska Native woman in 1993 at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Stephen Downs was convicted in the rape and murder of 20-year-old Sophie Sergey. KUAC's Robin reports.
Sophie Sergey had been a marine biology student at the university the year before. She returned to Fairbanks from her tiny Yupik village of Pitkus Point in far western Alaska the last weekend of April 1993 for an orthodontist appointment on the following Monday. She stayed in the dorm with a friend who knew her from their time together in Native youth leadership organizations. She was last seen after midnight Sunday on her way to have a cigarette. She was found Monday afternoon in a restroom down the hall. She had been raped and shot in the head. The defendant, Stephen Downs of Maine, was never suspected of the crime until 25 years later, when DNA collected from the crime scene was partially matched to a profile in a commercial genealogy database in 2018. That profile was Downs's aunt. Alaska State Troopers traced the genealogy to Downs, who was living in the dorm that spring of 1993. Fairbanks Superior Court Judge Thomas Temple read the verdicts.
Murder in the first degree of SS. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree of SS, dated at Fairbanks, Alaska, the 10th day of February, 2022. Sexual assault in the first degree of SS. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of sexual assault in the first degree of SS, dated at Fairbanks, Alaska, this 9th day of February, 2022, signed by the jury foreperson.
The victim's two brothers listened into the verdicts remotely from St. Mary's in the Yukon River Delta. Older brother Alexei Sergey said in an interview that he feels relieved after decades of uncertainty.
With the DNA, I'm pretty sure it's right, guys. Nowadays, DNA won't lie to you.
Alexei Sergey said he forgave the perpetrator decades ago in an effort towards closure.
I forgave him for what he did to me, but I'll never forget.
The judge scheduled sentencing in September. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Sports wagering for Sunday's Super Bowl will be in full swing this year. Research from the American Gambling Association finds more than 18 million people plan to bet online, in person at sports books, or with a bookie on the matchup between the Los Angeles Rams and the Cincinnati Bengals. The Navajo Nation will soon get into the sports betting action. The tribe is teaming up with the Seminole Tribe of Florida's Hard Rock. They've joined forces to launch the Hard Rock Sportsbook mobile app in Arizona. John Chapper is Senior Director of Communications for Hard Rock Digital.
The Hard Rock Sportsbook app allows you to place bets on all the major sports. We'll have great promotions, also live betting. So if you see your team's losing, you think you got a big comeback in store, you can jump in there. Major sports, also some more niche sports. Soccer, you can do table tennis. It really just makes your game days a little more fun, a little more engaging, and allows you really to connect with the product on the screen.
Brian Parrish is the interim chief executive officer for the Navajo Nation Gaming Enterprise.
Really excited about our partnership with Hard Rock, with their sportsbook and Hard Rock Digital. They have an excellent team and outstanding product. Their value systems and their goals and objectives align very nicely with ours, and so it was a perfect fit.
Sports betting became legal in Arizona in 2021. The digital Hard Rock Sportsbook is expected to be launched in the state this month. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
New studies raise concern about the effects of radio frequency radiation on wildlife and call on federal agencies to regulate radiation as an environmental pollutant. Suzanne Potter has the story.
A growing body of scientific studies shows that electromagnetic fields from the extremely low frequencies common to power lines and radio frequency radiation, the kind from cell towers and mobile devices, may be harmful to wildlife as well as humans. A three-part review of the literature recommends the feds regulate electromagnetic radiation as pollution. B. Blake Levitt is author of two books on the subject and lead author of the study. She says RF radiation, even at low levels, caused harm in every animal model studied, especially bees and birds.
They depend on the Earth's natural magnetic fields for orientation, migration, food finding abilities, mating, nest and den building, territorial maintenance and defense.
The telecom industry says its products and towers are safe and comply with all federal regulations for human exposure. The study authors want the feds to create exposure standards for wildlife and plants to designate the air as critical habitat and then regulate electromagnetic radiation as an energetic pollutant. Study co-author Albert Manville is an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins and a retired biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says we can't let industry profits override environmental concerns.
Yet the industry has proceeded going ahead. Now we have 5G rolling out in massive quantities without due diligence to determine are these sources of radiation safe not only to humans but to wildlife. And the answer is no, they're not.
Dr. Joel Moskowitz is director of the Center for Family and Community Health at UC Berkeley. He says the problem is only going to grow.
The industry is putting up something like 800,000 small cell sites around the country, roughly doubling or tripling the current number of cell towers. So our ambient levels of exposure are going to increase dramatically within the next few years.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Hurricanes can cause ocean acidity to spike, and marine life may be vulnerable to these fluctuations. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Hurricanes are powerful. They can tear the roofs off houses and cause dangerous floods. Their impacts are even felt at the bottom of the ocean. Scott Noakes of the University of Georgia has been monitoring water quality at Gray's Reef National Marine Sanctuary for 15 years. His group has seen carbon dioxide levels steadily rise over time, which is no surprise because the ocean absorbs carbon pollution. But they've also observed unexpected spikes.
We didn't see these peaks on the surface. We only saw them on the seafloor.
He realized they coincided with extreme storms. He explains that ocean sediment contains carbon from decaying plants and animals that have settled on the ocean floor. When a hurricane hits, the turbulence and pressure changes draw carbon out of pockets in the sediment. That makes the water near the seafloor very acidic. He says the sponges, sea squirts, and corals down there can tolerate some fluctuations in acidity. But as the climate warms and hurricanes get stronger, the spikes will get bigger.
The question is, at what point can they no longer handle that?
So he says more research is needed to understand the impact on marine life. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 11th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Porter, Eric Tegetoff, Mary Sherman, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, you will have heard many things recently about the supply chain as the reason you can't find what you're looking for on the store shelf, or the reason it costs so much. But what's behind it all? Why has the system broken down in this way? Here's where thoughtful reporting could fill us in, could educate on a set of issues that affect us all. But corporate news media aren't great